Welcome to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell. I'm a talent management thought partner and results coach, wife, and mom. Talent management leaders are hungry to learn from their peers and want to hear about real-life talent initiatives. This podcast is for and by talent management leaders. My guests and I dig into successes, challenges, and lessons learned from a very practical, not theoretical, point of view. You'll discover important insights about how to elevate your confidence and amplify your influence in a role known for being caught in the organizational middle. I'm thrilled to have you listening. So let's get going and hear the truth about talent management today. One of the most important skills that talent leaders must master is working effectively with stakeholders, your internal clients. It's also the area that many of you struggle with the most. So what do your internal stakeholders really value about you, your team, and the services you provide? What works from their perspective and what doesn't? Tune in today to hear from someone who's been that internal client to many HR teams over the years. With this episode, I'm continuing to bring stakeholder perspectives to the show, going beyond stories from other talent leaders. My guest is Rana Ghosh. Rana is Vice President of Omnichannel, Loyalty, and Ancillary Revenue at Spirit Airlines. Rana is a so-called corporate gypsy who has moved from the financial sector to energy retail and now loves being in the airline space. He leads Spirit Airlines' digital transformation, e-commerce, ancillary revenue, loyalty programs, and guest care. He's passionate about people development and technology. He lives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and loves travel, concerts, movies, sports, bourbon, food, and theater. And he hates boredom and bad storytelling. Rana and I got our start in leadership together many moons ago and have remained great friends ever since. He is the real deal, my listeners. An authentic, inspiring, incredibly smart, and visionary leader. And he's also one of the funniest people I've ever met. My face generally hurts from laughing so much after I've seen him. Enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome back to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell, and today is very exciting for me. I'm joined by a good friend of mine and former colleague, Rana Ghosh. Rana is the Vice President, it's a very long title, of Omnichannel, Commerce, Loyalty, and Guest Care at Spirit Airlines. It's my pleasure to have you here today, Rana. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm very excited. It's been far too long for you to have invited me to your show, finally. So,
frankly, yes. I don't know what took me so long. Damn. Well, so for listeners, part of what's exciting about this show is not just to get to spend more time with Rana, but also because this year, some of you may know this, I've put it out on social and in some of my newsletters, but I'm trying to bring something a little bit new to the show. So in addition to interviewing talent, learning and development, HR leaders on the show, which, you know, you guys are principally the listeners of it, I'm also inviting leaders from a variety of different business units, because one of the things I see in my work so often is that talent leaders that I support are trying to figure out how to best serve their stakeholders. And they have so many. It's a very tricky role because they're not revenue generators. They're kind of in the middle. Everybody wants something from them, but they also don't necessarily want to give them the resources in terms of time, money, et cetera, to do the things. And sometimes, you know, that's what we tell ourselves. It's not always true, but it is tricky because you want to serve. And so influencing stakeholders, really understanding what they want is critical. And this is where we can get tripped up. So by bringing on different perspectives, such as Rana's, coming from more of a marketing side of things, I think it'll give us some important insights that we can really use and apply immediately. So that said, Rana, could you tell us a little bit about your professional journey, career journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So started from an education side, so I'm going to go way back, and started with a science degree, did a master's in neuroscience, and then managed to never use it a day after my graduation date. So I'm very proud of the fact that I spent a number of years, you know, educating myself on something that I never used. But from there, and certainly where you and I originally met, worked in the kind of the financial services space, and primarily kind of in the kind of the BPO kind of, you know, idea that we had. And then from there, moved into retail energy, which was kind of a new field at the time. It was going through quite a bit of deregulation. And so it was kind of an exciting growth period throughout, both in Canada and in the US, and which is kind of where it ultimately kind of led me. And then since I left there, I joined the airline space. So three entirely disparate industries. I clearly love regulation because I keep following it around, but it's been just a wild journey. You know, I think I've been fortunate where I've kind of gone from build to build, you know, depending on both the companies and the industries that I've been in. And it's just been absolutely fantastic, you know, and even up to the point where I am now, we've been around for a number of years. I was really here at a period when there was a lot of change happening within the organization in terms of our business model and kind of the focus that we were going to put into the marketplace. And so it's really been thrilled that I've been part of a lot of very cool things that have happened in the industry.
Well, it is fascinating, right? When you think about, I don't know, I hate to say it, but I think it's about 25 years ago that we worked together on the same management team. So yeah, we're dating ourselves, but I was in charge of learning at the time. And Trudy was our boss. And you yes. were one of the call center managers, I think, right?
Well, I actually started as a CSR, right?
So yeah, so did I.
Yeah, so when I first was there, I think you were already in management.
I think I trained you.
Yeah, I think
did
so.
Did I train you?
I think so. And you know, it's interesting. I was just talking to my wife about this the other day, that the time that we spent there, that although it was sort of starting at a you know, obviously a very junior level and really felt like, hey, I really underperformed in terms of education to, you know, first opportunity, that the years that I spent there, I value incredibly, because I think there was so much that we learned, because we were thrown into so many opportunities and there was a lot of sort of being seconded into different projects and initiatives.
Yes. And RFPs and
yeah. And that was, you know, I think that was just such an incredible learning in terms of just the different types of areas and functions that you can potentially, you know, get interested in. And then on top of that, having a boss like Trudy, you know, who gave us a lot of latitude and gave us, but at the same time, you know, really helped us get the mindset around service and people, has really been the foundation of how I think to this day, right? That it was an invaluable learning at the time, which I didn't really recognize. You know, it was sort of one of these things where you think, hey, we're just like this little small little unit and this little business, and you know, how would we fare in the real world?
Well, and you know what's so interesting is that when I think back to those days, you know, so it had a large call center component and then the large business process outsourcing, you know, so the back office and stuff, is that a large group of us, the majority of the group of us that would hang out together, like we worked hard, but we also played hard. We had a lot of fun together and still do, not as frequently. So many of us ended up in senior executive positions. So many of us, I mean, I can count them off, you know, it's just nuts. So, and I wonder why that is. I often think about that. It felt like such a ripe, fertile training ground, right? You know, because as you said, we were kind of thrown into stuff and seconded, you know, I was seconded for almost 2 years on one project, and it was the most brilliant experience I ever had. And I also, it was hard at times, but because we were such a tight-knit group, you know, I think that sort of made it fun. So you would push through when it got a little bit rough. So the other thing too, that I'd just like to point out from those days is that I married the guy I met there, and three of my best friends are from that era. I mean, you know, and then like that I see a lot of my girlfriends. And so, yeah, really, really special time. So you left there. So now talk a little bit. So then you were really in operations, customer service, and then somewhere along the line, you really started focusing more on, I think, sales and marketing.
Really didn't know what I was doing, frankly, at the beginning. You know, I just kind of got into it because it seemed cool and because I was living in Alberta. So if you're in Alberta, you're kind of working in the energy space.
Right.
And within that area, I had a number of roles and started from very operations kind of led to product and then eventually to sales and then into kind of more marketing type roles. And then moved from there eventually to the airline space, which again, it was a totally different
huge shift.
And have been pretty much in the marketing arena since then. So I guess it'll be about 8 years now. And it's been just a kind of a wild ride, you know, going through various industries. You kind of learn not only just the technical sort of details of the industry, but you also learn that as you kind of continue to move forward, most businesses kind of require the same types of things to operate. And it's so, you know, you continue to apply your learnings from the previous one and go to the next one. But just been incredibly fortunate to have had the opportunities that I've had.
Yeah. It's been such a neat experience watching your career as you've moved around, right? From in Ontario, Mississauga, east of Toronto, where we started together about 20, 25 years ago. And then you moved to Alberta with your love.
Yes.
And now you're in the States.
Yeah. So I moved
Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, that's right. I moved to Pittsburgh in between and then from Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Oh,
ended
yeah.
up in Fort Lauderdale, during COVID. I actually moved back to Canada for a year or two and then came back again. So it's been, I've sort of followed where the interest has been. And, it's sort of so far that has led us to South Florida.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Got to get down there one of these days. All right. So what I appreciate about your background and about you coming on the show is because you got such diversity in terms of, different industries and different roles. And you have encountered, I'm sure, a whole lot of partners in the area of HR, talent management, learning development, and so on. And so I'd love to understand how you define talent management, and HR in general, because talent, I'm not just talking about tiny talent, let's do the tap, or some people see talent management as more on the talent acquisition
right.
side of things, but it's a little bit broader here. So how do you view it?
Well, let me just start by saying that I have been incredibly fortunate to have had great HR partners almost in every gig that I've had. And, there's been a couple of blips, in there that as I've gone through my career where some changes have not exactly been the best in terms of some of the partners that I've ended up with, but in the whole, so I'd say 95% of the time I've ended up with having great HR partners and HR support. And the reason I say that is that I think one of the most important things for me in terms of partnership is truly being embedded in my business. So for me, the best HR partners that I've had and the HR sort of teams that I've had have always really had a good understanding of what the drivers were of my business, right? And so right. whether it was around very specific technical skill sets, whether it was around some market issues in terms of, what was available in terms of talent in the marketplace and being able to adjust to that, being competitive with both on the acquisition side and on the retention side. But then just as important, frankly, was once they come into the organization, is how do we actually develop them? How do we actually get them to be the top, sort of realize the potential that we thought they had when they first applied. And I have a very transparent approach, I think, with my HR partners in terms of I share a lot and probably share more than they even care about in terms of my business. Because I can sometimes see their eyes roll back in the back of their heads a little bit. But I think it's important that they understand what I think about. And by understanding what I think about in terms of the things that I am concerned about and what I'm trying to get done, whether they're HR related or not, if you understand those things, then you're in a much better position to be able to identify where there may be some gaps coming up. There may be gaps that I've already have. There may be some opportunities or issues that need to be identified. I recognize we all have blind spots. And so I look for multiple partners, not just HR, but certainly HR helps me identify that if there are things that I'm not paying attention to or potentially need to pay more attention to, then that's a great way for them to be able to flag those items for me.
I do see that as a huge part of the value that HR and talent can bring is because they're looking kind of holistically. They're not in the sort of specialist domain or the generalist domain. So they're sort of able to figure out did you know that this is going on over here or that this person's had this reaction and so on. How what's been the most effective way that someone surfaced a blind spot for you?
So there's sort of a couple of things. One is somewhat formally, meaning that there's a host of courses out there, right? These assessment programs that you can take.
Yes.
And I'm a sucker for those, right? Those are some of the my favorite things that I've ever done in terms of workshops and what have you. And these are, for lack of a better term, these are personality sort of assessments. And what they continue to sort of highlight are how your strengths can also be your weaknesses, right? And because I've done enough of these, I am constantly cognizant of the fact that the things that I lean on most heavily in terms of what I consider to be my strengths and frankly, what I'm most comfortable with, because, if I consider them my strengths, I'm also most comfortable with them, is also the area of kind of complacency for me, that because I rely on those things, that there are things that I'm probably not paying attention to or I'm overusing, right? And I'm relying too heavily on some of those strengths. The other more less structured way is that most of my HR partners, I have become generally friends with my HR partners, and they feel comfortable enough clearly to just tell me that I've got these blind spots. So I think it's always been great for me to just get feedback on what those opportunities are, because I think the worst thing in my mind that I could do is just assume that I've got it, you know, that I'm covering all the bases and not take that input from others. And so I think the biggest learning for me over the last 30 years, 25 years has been to really stop talking, which I'm not doing a very good job of right now, but you know, it's kind of my job.
That's okay. That's what you're supposed to do in a podcast.
But I doing a lot more listening, right? I think in the past, back, you know, when you and I worked together, you would have known that, and I'm quite open to share this, that I wasn't the best at it. You know, I had a real strong view on my capabilities and, you know, what were the things that I was doing, and felt that other inputs really were not the things that I needed. And over time, you realize very quickly that it's a very poor assumption to make. And certainly over time, I think I've become more comfortable, frankly, around receiving feedback, because I've only seen it help me in terms of my career growth. So if it helps me, I try to apply again those same principles to others, right? In terms of finding out how comfortable they are with my feedback. And if they're not, that's fine. You know, we'll get there. But I share that story, you know, I share kind of my own experience because I recognize how important it has been for me.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. Well, first of all, the whole idea that strengths, I say this a lot of time, weaknesses are really your strengths magnified, right? You're either overusing them or underusing them. And so part of our journey on this earth, both professionally and personally, is really to figure out, like, how can we become more agile so that we're not, it is just the way I am. And we're instead choosing to kind of dial up or dial down as a situation demands or the people around us. And that's a core part of what I think talent and HR leaders can do is, you know, what I wrote down just now too, what you were saying around feedback is help leaders learn how to get feedback, how to receive it gracefully, right, and really grow from it to become more agile, and help them give it in a way that has the impact you want and not the opposite, right?
That's exactly right. You're 100% correct.
Yeah. Okay. So when you think about the role, and it's tough here because HR and talent, it's so broad, right? Because you could have HR people that are really focused on comp and payroll or operations or employee relations, or more on the talent side, the growing and the development side. And I kind of cover that whole space in terms of who listens. But if you were to say, you know, what the core value is of this discipline that we call talent, for you as a business leader over the years, what is that value?
Well, to me, I think it is the idea that the people as an asset, right? So if you consider this as a fundamental asset of the business. So just like I think about our planes in my current gig, right, as a core asset, right? That I really gotta maintain it. I gotta acquire them. I gotta make sure they're clean and functioning and working well. I mean, I don't do any of those things, but you know, the organization does those things. Yes. But if I think about that as an asset, right, and that is a core asset for us to be successful as a business, right? That in order for us to go out there and be successful, I think about people in very much the same way. And so when I think about what HR is supposed to help me with, are all those things that I just mentioned, right? How do I acquire? How do I maintain? How do I develop? How do I ensure that you know, where there's sort of the appropriate hygiene that we're kind of putting our kind of employees through? But that to me is that if you're able to actually get the maximum value of the individuals that are part of the organization, are coming into the organization, or been here for many years, that ultimately is where businesses succeed, right? And you know, if I think about sort of the math for me has always been, you take care of your people and you make sure that they are the best they can be. They will then in turn take care of your customers and have the best customers that you can get. And that takes care of the money, right? So the money is the end. The money is not the thing you're doing right from the get-go, right? You can have a business model that is trying to make me money, but the real way to get there to me is start with your people who will take care of your customers, who will take care of getting you paid.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the employee experience that drives that customer experience.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Completely. Yeah. Full stop. Okay.
And I've been in, you know, I've been in environments where I've seen exactly that, employees that are thrilled. And where I am actually is a good example. And you know, I don't think my PR guys will beat me up too much for saying this, but when I first got here, I think there was a real sense that we were a cheap airline. And so, you know, employees, you know, the flight attendants, the folks at the airport, you know, anyone that wore the Spirit shirt, we're not super proud of where they were, right? Because they were not seen as as a company that was necessarily offering the kind of value out in the marketplace on its own. It was cheap. And so people treated it as cheap, right? And, you know, so all the kind of discussions would occur. And so you'd see people when they go for lunch, they take their badges off and they kind of go out there and talk. But then when we made the shift that said, hey, we're gonna actually be a value-based airline, meaning that we want to offer the kind of the appropriate level of service over the cost, right, over the price that you pay, that gives you high value, right? So ultimately, all value is determined by how you think about what you paid and what you got for it, right? And that's what the value statement is. And when we made that shift and started really, you know, getting ourselves to a spot where the employees felt like they were offering a good service, because they were being taken care of, they were constantly being, we were training them more, we were giving them, you know, appropriate just attire, right? Like just their, you know, they look more professional. And then giving them professional programs that they can enter into, getting better communication, et cetera, et cetera. All those things that were happening, they really started swelling up in terms of their own pride. And then they started taking care of their customers, our passengers, our guests, in a much more professional manner. And we became wildly profitable, right? And so, you know, nothing better than watching it happen in real life, in just real time, seeing all that stuff that I just was just saying happen over the last couple of years. And I think that's just been just evidence of my belief system on how this works.
And what a fabulous example. So congratulations, by the way, on the fact that the company's had such great success. But it's such a great example of, you know, it takes everyone, right? This collaboration to even make this happen so that the employees could feel taken care of and have the training and development that they needed in order to serve the customers in order to, right? You know, I mean, it's business, various business units coming together with the folks that might be listening, you know, talent and HR and, you know, coming at it from all angles, bringing all those perspectives to bear.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. So when you look back now, so you've had some, you know, been very fortunate with some of the partners that you've had, which is so music to my ears, so great to hear. You know, is there any kind of time when you got to an organization or a period in an organization where, you know, you were like, oh, like, we don't have this. I wish HR or talent could deliver on this. Like, you know, I used to have this. I really miss it. Or there was something about the approach that wasn't working for you the same. And I'm not looking for you to tell tales, but just like, what doesn't work for you?
Yeah. Well, I think the idea that HR exists simply as a when you need it type of approach is what doesn't work for me as a rule, right? So in organizations that I'm, and like you said, I'm not going to name any names, but there have been parts, and I've moved around within companies quite a bit as well, right? So sometimes you sort of move from Department X or Division X and move to Division Y. And so, you know, they have their own sort of support functions. But I've sort of seen the range of, and what I'm more into now is having individuals that, I like I said, are embedded in my business in a sense. But what doesn't work for me are groups that sort of sit on the sidelines and just are there if you need them. So if you have an issue or if you have a problem, go to them. And I think that's where HR and talent management really fails, right? Because they don't know who my folks are. They don't know what are the challenges within my team. They don't understand what we're trying to accomplish from a goals perspective. And as a result of it, their response tends to be a little bit rote. So they tend to have responses that says, hey, the playbook says do this. And that's the response. And again, I said, listen, I could have come up with that myself, right? I don't need support for that. What I really need is someone whose discipline is HR and talent management to be thinking about these things kind of concurrently as I am, right? And understanding who the folks are within my shop that are doing those things. So that's probably the only thing that I would say has been my biggest issue, you know, is when HR does not see themselves really as being part of the business, that you see themselves almost as a sort of an administrative peripheral side of the business. To me, it's absolutely core to the way businesses should run, right? That you should have strong HR teams that feel like they are just as critical for success as the revenue guys, the commercial guys, and the operations guys.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, though, I will tell you that in reality, for lots of folks that I work with and some organizations that I work with, you know, HR feels relegated to the sidelines, yep. Rightly or wrongly. Not every leader is as transparent as you or as agile as you have become and chosen to become. So sometimes there's grains of truth to that they're not invited in or they're pushed away when they try to come to that proverbial table. What are your thoughts around that? Like what can these leaders do when they are feeling like they can't sort of nudge their way in?
Well, I think, you know, for me, it's about value creation, right? And I think, you know, and I've been guilty of what you just said as well, that you know, if I'm busy and on certain things and I just don't have time and I just think, okay, well, you know, I'll get to that later, right? I'll get to that HRE thing later.
Like
it's,
yeah.
It's not the top of my list. But ultimately it comes down to value creation in everything we do, right? And so for leaders that are struggling to kind of be seen, I suppose, by within their organization, I think my recommendation is find out what you believe to be the issues. And most people will tell, you know, if you're not invited by the leadership, I'll tell you who will invite you are the boots on the ground as a rule, right? Because boots on the ground love to talk about what's happening within their,
yes,
their shops. And my recommendation is spend as much time with the people, understand what the issues are, and then start working on it, irrespective of what the leadership may have said is your set of priorities, right? And if you can bring some wins to the table, I think that's what ultimately gets you noticed, right? Is that in any part of the organization, frankly, and this is truly of anyone, but not just HR. But the reason groups get somewhat relegated to the periphery is because then people just don't think they're that important, right? They're not core to the way the business should be run. And so if you can kind of show that, hey, here's what I was able to find out, and here's what I've been able to do as a result of the things that I've discovered, and here's how it's going to impact your business, right? It's going to mean that you're going to be able to run faster, or you're going to be more efficient, or you're going to be able to compete more aggressively with your main competitor. Those are the types of kind of value statements that people want to hear. And it helps people make the connection between what HR does and what the business goals are, right? And I think that's always the difficulty for, like, when I hear those kind of, because I hear what you just said from a lot of my HR friends, right, that are outside of this organization. And I kind of give them the same advice, because I think again, they haven't really sort of thought through what are the things that they can necessarily do, because they're kind of order following and just sort, yeah, of direction, as opposed to saying, hey, I'm just going to sort of take this on myself and I'm going to create something that maybe wasn't asked for.
Yeah, it's so funny. So early in my, you know, when I did do the HR gig, not just the training and talent side the whole time. And I remember my boss, friend of mine, Sherry, said to me, you know, she goes, listen, we are not the party planners and order takers.
Right.
We, you know, people might think you are, yep, and you're not the police either. You're not there to police. Mm-hmm. So you're, you know, it's, and so I've really come to have this whole philosophy that it's about the value you add. Do you remember Trudy, our old boss, would say, in God we trust, all others bring data? Yes,
bring data,
you know,
exactly.
So that has always stuck with me as well, right? So it's get those wins, show the data, you know, help leaders see what they can't see, which you were speaking about earlier. What are the blind spots? You know, so a couple of things you touched on. So with this, I could have come up with this myself. So right there, we don't want clients to be saying that, right? So we've got to think like our stakeholders, right? And understand, like, how are they seeing the world, not how do you see it? And right, you know, because a lot of really well-intentioned, brilliant HR and talent leaders, myself included, you know, back in the day would be like, this is what we need them to do, right? They need to embrace this program. It's going to fix all of their problems, right? Because, you know, we get so enthusiastic about the latest thing and all that kind of stuff. But it may, you know, because that, you know, we don't like it when leaders prescribe solutions, say, here's the problem, here's the prescription I want you to deliver. But nor should we prescribe without really a first understanding, what are we trying to solve for? What is this all about? And providing options first, not just going with, you know, the first thing that comes up.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Okay. So we're almost out of time. So I'm going to come to my last question here. So when you think about, you know, it's kind of a crazy world right now, right? We've got a lot of stuff going on with this out of control inflation and interest rates and people experiencing homelessness more and more and, you know, all over the place. And there's just a lot of also social justice issues going on, right? Like with a lot of outreach. And, you know, we had coming out of the COVID, like, pandemic era, like, it's really been something else. So when you look at all of that, what would you say what is maybe the biggest opportunity for talent and HR leaders right now to make an impact?
Yeah, I think this is maybe a kind of almost like my response is more of a broader leadership comment, right?
Okay.
Is that I think, and this is where I, but I, obviously I feel like HR is what can help with this, is that I think this idea of vulnerability amongst leadership, right, I think is been something that's been kind of out there, you know, Brandon Brown and everything else, and we're always talking about this. But I think more than ever, it's become, you know, kind of almost critical, right? Because as so much is happening, and if you can actually acknowledge that you're not entirely clear sometimes on how to approach certain issues that may be happening, that maybe you're learning yourself, right? So we're, as an organization, we're going through a major DEIB, I'll call it implementation, right? We're trying to make this, you know, more core to the fabric of who we are. And as part of that, though, is, you know, I think you have to sort of start with an acknowledgement that says, I really didn't know that much about it before, right? And maybe, right. You know, maybe I've got a bunch of blind spots that I'm not aware of, or I don't even understand what the issues are, right? And having some of that vulnerability and having that conversation to be able to say that I'm willing to learn, right? And input matters, right? Input sort of helps me kind of get better educated. And if I make, you know, if there's some faux pas that I go through, I think we have to have kind of the ability to just acknowledge that there is a lot going on and that other people have gone through a lot, right? That you know, whatever we may be thinking about in terms of kind of the expectations that we have of our teams, that we only sort of see what they're willing for us to see. And just having a little bit of openness to just acknowledge that maybe what we're seeing is not everything that is happening, you know, that it's the iceberg sort of effect. You know, you sort of see the tip, and the rest of it is, you know, there's a lot going on potentially at the household and a lot going on in terms of how people are thinking about themselves or how they think about safety or how they're thinking about belonging. All of those really are, you know, they're critical for us to be thinking about, but it's a lot to think about, you know, and if you have bigger teams like I do, it's difficult to, you know, get that kind of connection with that many people, right? So the kind of the approach for me is, I think is how to sort of train leaders to train their leaders to in turn train their leaders, right? To allow for that openness and being vulnerable, where you can have those conversations, you can actually allow people to approach you. And I think it's okay to just learn how to say no, right? I don't know, not no as in I don't want to. No, as in I really don't have the answer. And I think that's going to be, I think that'll differentiate, honestly, the companies that do that well versus ones that don't, right? I think we're in a very different marketplace. You know, COVID flipped things on its head. And I think leadership is going to have to adopt and adapt to really be successful as we go forward.
Yeah. 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 Beautifully put. And I really resonates with me this, and it does apply to broader leadership, this idea of vulnerability being critical. I mean, it is. It's almost like a non-negotiable at this point. And what's great is that I am seeing more and more organizations and leaders talking about it. So it makes me feel hopeful, right? Particularly after coming through such a tough period for people as they sort of navigate, like, wow, what's this all about now?
Well, in fact, I mean, I'd say it's probably the hardest thing for individuals, forget about leaders, just individuals broadly, to allow that to happen, right? In a space that they consider to be work, you know, this idea, you know, we always sort of think about this idea of being who you are, irrespective of where you are, right? So who you are outside of work and who you are at home, and the easiest thing to do would be that same person in all of those facets of your life, right? And for those individuals that are not, don't like to open themselves up at home or at the office or at any other space, asking people at work to do that suddenly just feels like a huge violation, right? And I think that's the difficulty is that it's not, you're not really trying to crack them into a different space just at the workspace, in the workplace rather. You're trying to actually crack into them as individuals, right?
As humans, right? The very fragile human side of us, right? Like instead of packing that away and feeling like I have to have all the answers and I have to appear credible and, you know, it's And I think modeling the way, right, like it has to start with each of us.
That's right.
And we have to make it safe, right? Yeah. Truly safe. And really think about not what's safe for you, what's safe for other people, to allow them to kind of, you know, step just briefly outside the comfort zone, right? To be a little more vulnerable and open. Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
Awesome. Well, thank you so, so much, honestly, from the bottom of my heart for coming on today. And this has been really insightful. I have a million little sound bites and quotes, and you brought a lot of great perspective for us. Thank you.
Well, you're quite welcome, Lisa. I really appreciate you letting me do this. And okay. I got to say, we've come a long way since Bandcamp. So
there's the Bandcamp reference. Okay. Okay, listeners, I'm not telling you about that one. All right. All right. Bobby, great to see you.
You take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your colleagues. Better yet, head over to iTunes and let us know. When you subscribe and leave me a 5-star review, not only do I glow from within, but more people will learn about the show and why they should listen. Until next time, keep telling the talent management truth.